Joining us right now to help with that conversation is a New York Times bestselling author. His books include The Bad Guys Won, Love Me, Hate Me, Boys Will Be Boys, The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Sweetness and Showtime, and of course, Gunslinger, the remarkable, improbable, iconic life of Brett Favre. He was a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day. Good friend of the program. He is Jeff Perlman. First off, Jeff, it is great to have you back. How are you? How's your family? How are things?
I'm good. It's interesting, Jim. As you know, and as I've praised you many times, I live in California in large part because of you, and I moved from New Rochelle, New York, and my dad for years hated that I moved to California, and when New Rochelle was quarantined, he actually looked at me for the first time and said, maybe that was a good move. So I owe that to you, dad's approval.
Good. I appreciate that. Jeff Perlman joining us. All right, Jeff, there was no way that I could do a look back at Brett Favre without talking to you. I mean, we could do a three-hour show talking about him and it still wouldn't cover it. I've had to rush through even that part. I got to pick my spots. So when you think about Brett Favre, the New York Jet, for instance, what is the first thing that comes to mind for you as Favre as a Jet?
I think it was a really weird and awkward and clumsy fit. You know, he desperately wanted to go to the Vikings, and the Packers wouldn't allow that to happen. And it basically came down to either him being shipped to Tampa Bay or to the Jets. And when he got the call that he was traded to the Jets, he and his agent were just dumbfounded and very upset about it. And the whole year was kind of a weird fit. He stepped in for Chad Pennington, who had been the quarterback for a long time. The Jets' top receiver, Lavernius Coles, was Chad Pennington's best friend on the Jets. It was a really awkward year, I think, that started with a lot of hope and ended with a thud.
Jeff Roman's joining us. You know, go back to that point, though, about him and the way things ended in Green Bay. He, of course, announced his retirement, and then he started to have second thoughts. What's your sense as to why the Packers did not want to bring him back? At that point, were they just tired of him, or were they eager to move on to Aaron Rodgers? How much of it was about Favre, and how much was about Rodgers?
You know, it's really interesting, but through the years, especially after it happened, actually, the Packers got a lot of blame and for mangling it and mismanaging. And I always thought that was terribly unfair. You had a quarterback, you gave him every opportunity, and I love Brett Favre, but you gave him every opportunity to keep that job, to come back. You endured the, I'm going to retire, I'm not going to retire, over and over again. Finally, he says he's going to retire. He holds a press conference announcing that he's going to retire. You have this guy, Aaron Rodgers, who you believe is going to be what he has actually become. You decide to hand it over to him. And then Brett Favre basically says, yeah, never mind. I think I'm going to come back. And people were mad at the Packers at that point, if you remember, really mad at the Packers for not giving Favre the opportunity. And it was just ridiculous. They had moved on. They were ready to hand it over to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was clearly ready for the job. So I always thought the Packers got a lot of blame, and it's easy to blame an organization when Favre and his indecisiveness was the number one reason it ended that badly in Green Bay.
I could not agree more. I said that at that time, and I was swimming upstream, but I agree with you. It was right then. It's right now. Jeff Perlman joining us. You know, it was such an awkward year, Jeff, but it's easy to forget. There was a point during that year where they got rolling. They beat the Pats in overtime in Week 11. They took over first place in the AFC East. Then the next week, they blew out a previously undefeated Titans team. Just how good were the Jets at that point?
Jets are really good. You know, I've struck up a decent friendship with Thomas Jones, their running back from that year.
Yep.
And I had some talks with him about just how ridiculously good that. If you look at that team, Favre was their quarterback, and he was playing really well until he hurt his arm. Thomas Jones and Leon Washington were the running backs. You know, Lavernius Coles was a legit wide receiver. Cotri was a legit number two. Dustin Keller was a really good tight end at that point. Like, they had a lot of talent going on. They had a very strong defense. And they were 7-3 they were 8-3. They beat Tennessee. They're 8-3. Like you mentioned, they beat New England in overtime. And then Favre's arm just starts falling apart. And I think Chris Baker, the tight end, was one who first in a practice was like, "What? Why is Brett throwing these ducks?" And basically the coaching staff's like, "No, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine." And they go in and they play a pretty bad Denver team, and they lose, I think it was 34-17. They lose the next week to San Francisco. They beat the Bills in overtime, but barely. And then they lose to Seattle, lose to Miami. And the killer, they lost to Miami the last week of the season. Chad Pennington was a quarterback of the Dolphins. And, you know, Favre's arrival was the end of Chad Pennington and the Chad Pennington era. And Pennington wound up having a pretty far superior season to Favre, who by the end of that year could barely lift his arm and could barely throw a football.
So what was your sense as to what his teammates thought had happened to him and his arm?
I think a lot of it was they just thought it was old age, and clearly he was hiding an injury. I think a lot of the blame, as is often the case in these things, Eric Mangini was the coach, and I think Mangini had a lot of positives as a head coach, but they built an offense around Favre on the quick. They got Favre on the quick, built an offense around Favre on the quick, made a lot of the terminology Favre-friendly, talked to Favre about what plays he liked to run, made it a Favre-centric offense in a matter of weeks, and as soon as Favre's arm starts hurting, they never adjust. Like I said, they had Thomas Jones and Leon Washington, two really, really high-quality running backs at that point, and they barely used them. And they kept throwing, having Favre throw 30, 35 times a game, and he just didn't have any zip left. And it was really, really bad in that Denver loss. I mean, he looked terrible, and after that game, there were a lot of people on that team who were just wondering, why is he still throwing the football when there's nothing on it anymore?
We're talking to Jeff Perlman. So, Jeff, later we find out during that season that he was allegedly sending unsolicited nude photos to Jen Sturger, who was a Jets employee at that time. How does all of that fit into the context of the Jet year for Brett Favre?
I just think he was a really, like I said, out of places. He didn't have any close friends on the team. He was in New Jersey, in suburb. People always think New York, you're playing for the Jets or the Giants. New York City, the bright lights. You know, he was living in Morristown, New Jersey. Like, you're by yourself in this house. Your wife is back and forth with your daughters. You're all alone. You're bored. It's a fascinating year. That and his Atlanta year, his rookie year, probably my two favorite years of Brett Favre as far as writing. But it was the loneliest year of his career, without question.
Jeff Perlman joining us. So ultimately, he does get to Minnesota, which is where he wanted to be. In the regular season, he was amazing. He wasn't throwing INTs. He was having a blast. They dominate the Cowboys in the first playoff game. And then you have that NFC Championship game against the Saints, which ends with that INT to Tracy Porter in the end. When you think about Brett Favre, Jeff, and that play, is that not one of the most Brett Favre plays ever?
I'd say there are two most Brett Favre plays ever. One is, you remember the throw he made to Sterling Sharp early in his career against Detroit? He just threw going left, and he threw this just bullet right to win a game against the Lions. It was, you know, iconic in every possible way. And the throw against New Orleans in the playoffs, it was everything Favre. It was the reason I always say, I don't think Brett Favre is one of the five or six greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. I just really don't. I think he's the most entertaining quarterback in NFL history. I think you never knew what you were going to get. Same thing with the interception with Corey Webster against the Giants. Those were throws that a smart, seasoned Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson never, ever even consider making. But the whole drama of Favre was that he made these stupid throws because his arm was so strong. 60% of the time they got through, but then the other 40% of the time you had disasters like that one.
Jeff Perlman joining us. That was a disaster, Jeff, and then of course that final year was even worse. He got hurt, his starting streak ended, he wanted to play in the outdoor game on the frozen turf against the Bears. That ended terribly. So let me ask you this, that final season, does it tarnish his legacy, or is that just how it is and part of the entire Brett Favre experience?
I just think it's no different than, you know, Johnny Unitas as a Charger, or, you know, to a lesser degree, Joe Montana as a Chief, or a million different guys in weird uniforms. I think at the end of the day, I truly do. I think a lot of people I talk to think Brett Favre's final throw as a Viking was against the Saints. A lot of people don't even remember his last year when he started 13 games. He had 11 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. He was just done at that point. And I just think most people don't even remember it. So to me, legacy-wise, that has almost no impact.
He is a New York Times bestselling author, Jeff Perlman. So finally, the end of his career was ugly, but what do you make of Favre now, Jeff, and how he's approaching life after football?
I think it's great. It's funny. When I was working on the book, a lot of people were telling me, oh, if you talk to Brett, you're going to see decline come real soon, and he doesn't seem that sharp, and blah, blah, blah. And everything I've seen, I'm still close with members of his family. I'm actually very close with his mother, Benita, who's just great. And it just seems like he's really embracing his life and enjoying his life. And he does a lot of biking. He does a lot of running. He's heavily involved in his daughter's lives. He's a grandfather. He just seems like he's really kind of figured it out how to be happy after football. And I think it took a while, as it does with most guys when they retire. But I think it really worked out well for him. It makes me happy. Generally makes me happy to see Brett Favre in 2020 being who he is.
Jeff Perlman is a New York Times bestselling author. I round down that list of books. Also a panelist on the Daily TV show back in the day. Good friend of the program. Jeff, it is so good to have you back. Glad to hear you're doing so well. And thanks for sharing your thoughts on Brett Favre. I could not do that segment without you.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Great talking to you. Jeff Perlman. And I knew that he'd have really good insight as to that time, especially that year in New York.